Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning into The Aftermath. Today, we'll be talking to author Helen Rapoport. She has written books about the Romanov family, including The Race to Save the Romanovs, The Truth Behind the Secret Plan to Rescue the Russian Imperial Family, and The Last Days of the Romanovs, Tragedy at Ekaterinburg. And she has a lot to say about the final days of this family. Hi, Helen. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Nice to hear your cheerful voice.
Oh, well, it's really nice to hear you. We're so excited to have you on the show. If you don't mind me asking, I mean, you've written so much about the Romanovs. What was it that initially drew you to the Romanovs?
Well, I would say it was more what initially drew me to Russia and everything Russian, because I came to the Romanovs quite late. I'd always been fascinated by Russia since I was a teenager. And when I got into history writing, I hadn't intended really to write about the Romanovs. And it was, in fact, an agent I was with at the time who suggested I should look at them. And I guess my initial response, I was, oh, my God, all that bling, all that kind of, you know, Anastasia Rasputin, all the mythology and that side of the story did not appeal to me. But when I started looking into it, I really became completely engrossed in that particular family, in the imperial family and their lives together. I wanted to get away from all the cliches and the schmaltz.
It's one of those that's so entrenched in all of the mythology around it that it's hard to know when you're getting the correct information, right?
The number of emails I've had from conspiracy theorists about, you know, one or all of the Romanovs escaping and living happily ever after. And I, you know, letters saying Anastasia was my granny. And then, you know, I've been bombarded over and over with, was Rasputin really this terrible demonic figure? Did he run Russia? Did he go to bed with the Tsarina? And all this absolute nonsense that's written about him drives me demented.
Well, we cannot wait to hear your take. If you could walk us through the family's living conditions while under house arrest in Ekaterinburg.
when the Romanov family were moved out to the house in Yekaterinburg in April 1918, they were moved into a much more closed and restricted environment than they had previously been held in the governor's house in Tobolsk. There they'd been quite free. They'd been allowed to exercise outside. They'd been able to have a degree of movement, and early on they'd even been allowed to go to church. But everything changed when Lenin's government really clamped down on the control of their imprisonment and moved them to Yekaterinburg, which was a very fiercely pro-Bolshevik stronghold in the Urals. And almost from the moment they arrived, they were made to feel this time they were effectively entering a prison, and the circumstances in which they were held were no longer house arrest. They were more like being in prison. And there were several shocking things that made it very clear how curtailed their freedom was now going to be. First of all, there were a huge number of guards patrolling outside the house, in the garden, manning machine guns up in the attic, machine guns in the church bell tower across the road, and also a huge, huge high wooden palisade was erected right round the house so that none of the local people passing up and down the street could see into the grounds, could see into the house. And equally, the Romanovs themselves from within the house could not look out onto the outside world. And previously, of course, they'd always been able to do that and even wave to people on the street. So the worst thing of all for them, though, was that it was coming up to summer. All the windows were tightly sealed. It was very stuffy and airless. And then they painted over the windows. They actually painted out the windows with whitewash. So they literally could not see the world outside. They could not open a window and hear what was going on until they actually had to make several appeals about that, because it became so oppressive and the lack of air was appalling. But the commandant actually allowed a window to be opened. But basically, they were in a very confined space, along with their doctor and the three very loyal servants who'd volunteered to come with them. And it was stressful. It was oppressive, especially as summer came on.
I mean, it must have felt so isolating. How did they even pass the time?
Well, it was very boring, because, of course, the other thing was that they were not allowed to go out. They were not allowed to go to church. Their post was stopped. They were not allowed to receive or send parcels. They weren't allowed any visitors. Now, just imagine those four hormonal girls locked up with a pretty neurotic mother, all going absolutely stir crazy, because there was only a very small, pokey little garden at the back, which they walked round and round and round in endless circles. It was terribly frustrating for Nicholas, who was a very fit, an active man and a great walker. He found the confinement very difficult to take, because he used to love going off for long walks. So in that sense, it was just incredibly, you know, closed in for them. It must have been very hard, because they had a few books with them, which they read and reread. I think by the time they were in Yekaterinburg, Nicholas certainly was rereading every book he could find in the house. I think the girls, all they could do to amuse themselves was actually a novelty of helping with the washing. They'd never done washing or looked after their personal things or cooked anything before. And so it's rather sweet. You find them making, there were some amusing comments early on before the news of them was really clamped down on, of them learning how to wash their underwear, you know, rather sad, because that was all there was for them to do. I mean, in terms of being occupied, the other thing they could do but had to do was keep an eye on their very sick brother and their equally sick mother. And so every day when the family went out for recreation, one or other of the four girls would sit with mother and read the Bible to her or something suitably pious. to keep her company. So in that sense, they were kept busy just looking after each other, but they had very, very little to do in terms of entertainment or occupation.
Did they ever attempt to escape? Are there any reports of them trying?
There is this whole business of some letters being smuggled into them, which were intended to provoke a response, or them intimating that they might want to escape. There is no way that family would or could have escaped from that house. And I do get very, very annoyed with people who write me these stupid emails saying that they all got away. They did not get away. The house was impregnable. There is no way you could have had a sick mother, a sick boy, four girls, and Nicholas all somehow miraculously escape. It was a hopeless situation. There was no way they were going to get out of there. And in fact, they made it very clear when messages were smuggled in that earlier on, actually, when they were in Tobolsk, when people suggested they might be able to go and rescue them, that they were adamant they did not want people's lives put at risk. They did not want people to get killed or hurt trying to rescue them. And in a way, by the time they were in Ekaterinburg, they were so reconciled, I think, to whatever fate would bring and to staying together, that they just did not want to flee. They really did not want to. And besides, how could they? You know, Alexei was very, very ill towards the end. I don't think he would have lived much longer anyway.
Wow. Do you think they actually understood what their fate would be?
Well, I think it's very difficult to judge that because, of course, we only have a few diary entries written by Nicholas and Alexandra, nothing from the girls, and, of course, no letters. They weren't allowed to send any letters. All one can do is intimate what might have been going through their minds, knowing them individually. I think certainly the Tsar would have known and accepted, and probably his wife too, that his head would roll. He had been head of state. He had been the embodiment of Tsarism and the whole autocratic imperial system. I'm sure Nicholas was perfectly aware that he might be shot or murdered or something. But I don't, whether he ever discussed it with his wife, I don't know. Maybe they did. I suspect Alexandra might have sensed. But I don't, you see, the thing that's so awful about the story is no one in their wildest moment, and certainly not Nicholas and Alexander themselves, could ever have thought that the Bolsheviks would murder their children.
Yes.
That was just beyond the pale, too horrific to contemplate. So, but I do get the impression from all I know of Olga, the eldest daughter, and this is from the way she was before they were moved, after the revolution, before they were moved to Siberia. She became very depressed, very upset that the Russian people hated her father so much. She could sense that their days were numbered. I think she was fearful because she did become very depressed, very thin, very withdrawn towards the end. And I think perhaps Olga sensed this was not going to end with any kind of release, that their days were numbered. But we can only guess. We can only guess because we know we don't have any absolutely concrete evidence.
Right. Now, you mentioned that they didn't even want to be rescued by their family members.
Well, not their family members. Their family members couldn't have rescued them. Half the Romanovs were in jail, had fled or had been murdered. People who might have been able to stage a rescue, had they been better organized, and they were hopeless, were the white Russian counter-revolutionaries who were fighting in and around Siberia. They were, you know, they were fighting against the Red Army and the Bolsheviks. So that the whites were incompetent, and I explain in my book The Race to Save the Romanovs, how impossible it was for all these different little cliques to come together and mount any kind of comprehensive or properly planned rescue mission. They could possibly, certainly, have got the family out of Tobolsk, there were opportunities missed there, or at a time when the guards were much more sympathetic to the family. This is, you know, when they were first in captivity before the Bolshevik takeover in November 1917. There could possibly have been a rescue from Tobolsk, but absolutely no way from Ekaterinburg.
It feels like such a hopeless situation.
It was hopeless. And I think in his heart of hearts, Nicholas knew it, certainly. But I do think Alexandra was probably in a bit of denial about it. I mean, she kind of gave up, actually. When they got to, by the time they got to Ekaterinburg, she became more and more absorbed in her religion, more religious, and reading the Bible and the scriptures and stuff all the time. And she kind of resigned herself to God. They were terribly fatalistic in that sense, as was the Tsar. It was, you know, God's will be done. And he resigned himself to his fate. And so he was a very religious man, as was his wife, as were the entire family. And maybe that's why they seemed calmer and more resigned, because their religious faith kept them going and helped them kind of come to terms with what might happen.
Now, did the family have any interaction with Yakov Yurovsky?
Well, only in the sense that he was the commandant of the house, in charge of the house for the last 2 weeks, and he was brought in specifically, really, to prepare for their murder. Their relationship with him was only as and when they had to interact with him. Most of the time, he was in his office, they were in their rooms, and never the twain should meet. And occasionally he would come in and supervise on the occasions when they were allowed a priest to come in and hold a service in their rooms. But essentially, they didn't like him. They were actually quite frightened of him, very mistrustful of him. So they knew he was a hardliner. And of course, he was there for a purpose, which was to murder them all.
What was their final evening like?
Well, we don't know, except it was much like every other day. Their lives, in fact, if you want, I think everyone can sympathize with the parallel of what their lives were like towards the end. They were in lockdown. They sat indoors all day. They went out for a walk for an hour or so, just like we've been allowed to here in Britain. They ate their food, they read a book, they went to bed, and every day was the same, day after day after day. And it's been a bit like that for all of us in lockdown during the pandemic, hasn't it? So their last evening was probably as much as any other evening. They ate a frugal meal. Nicholas read to them out loud, which he loved doing. They went to bed. Alexandra made a couple of lines about the day in her, I won't call it a diary, it was just a brief kind of notebook of what the temperature was and whether or not Alexei was sick or well. And they went to bed, and that was it. You know, there was nothing significant at all in that day, I think, that they would have noticed.
So at what point were they informed that they were going to be taken down to the basement?
Well, they were woken up. I think they were woken up after midnight, just in the early hours of the 18th. Was it the 17th? God, I can't remember now. Anyway, they were woken up in the very early hours of the morning, told to get dressed. Now, they didn't do it in a hurry. They were run off. They never hurried when Yurovsky gave them orders. So they got washed, they got dressed, and eventually, I don't know, by about 2 in the morning, they were taken downstairs. So into the basement. And the implication was they were being taken to the basement for their safety, because there was a lot of artillery fire in town and they were going to have to move them somewhere else that was a bit more secure. So initially they were told they were going to be taken somewhere else. But of course, they were a bit alarmed because they weren't allowed to put on their coats and hats and bring things. They were just kind of told to go downstairs. And they were left sort of waiting there. Alexandra insisted they bring in chairs for her and the boy to sit on, because both of them weren't in the best of health. And then the next thing, Yurovsky came in and read a very short document to Nicholas, who in utter incredulity asked him to read it again. And it was a short document saying, you know, you're going to be killed, shot, end of. And the next thing they knew, the Yuroskin and his men start all open fire.
Just absolutely incomprehensible how that could have happened. Now, from what I've read is that the Tsar and the Tsarina were the first that were killed.
The Tsar definitely was killed first. I wrote a very detailed account of this in Ekaterinburg. There's a whole chapter just about the killings. And I went through and analysed all the different eyewitness accounts, which are pretty confusing and muddled. And I talked for hours and hours to a ballistics expert who was also an expert witness on forensics and what happens to bodies when people are shot and horrible things done to them. And certainly Nicholas died first, if only because all the killers, and we're not quite sure how many there were, seven or eight, we think, wanted to be the one to shoot the Tsar. So instead of shooting their designated target, as they had been given a specific member of the family to kill and the servants, they all pointed their guns straight at Nicholas, shot him first, because they wanted to claim, I shot the Tsar. He died probably first, instantaneously. Alexandra soon after, but Alex, they didn't die immediately. And, of course, the girls suffered horribly because the assassins were pretty incompetent. And in the end, certainly, I think Maria and Anastasia had to be finished off with bayonets.
I know this is probably an impossible question for you, but if you had to pick one thing, what do you think, who or what do you think is to blame for the execution of the Romanov family?
Well, Lenin and his government. It's pretty clear to me. It's certainly, I'm certainly not going to wag my finger at King George V or anybody else, because I think the whole argument about how they could have been miraculously rescued from Russia, even when they were still in near Petersburg, it doesn't take into account a huge number of factors. So the person responsible is Lenin, although he didn't need to cleverly cover his tracks. He was so well protected by his colleagues in the Central Committee of the Bolshevik Party and the Soviet government. So then there was no paper trail back to him to prove that categorically his responsibility. But I know from all the research I did, and I say it in my book Ekaterinburg, there was a very significant meeting at the end of June where it was decided in Moscow, where the government had now moved, that when the time came, the Romanovs should all be killed, because they didn't want them to be rescued by the anti-Bolshevik forces. They didn't want them to be a rallying point for a counter-revolution. And they were dispensable. They had to be got rid of. So the decision was made at the top by Lenin. But there is no piece of paper showing that with his name nice and neat and clearly written at the bottom. I'm afraid that's inconvenient of history. We don't have a piece of paper, but I certainly, you know, blame him ultimately. Yeah.
Helen Rappaport, thank you so much for joining us today and talking to us about this terrible tragedy. We will definitely send all of our listeners to your large body of work.
If people want to find out more about what I've written about their own arse, it's helenrappaport.com on the web. And they will find all kinds of interviews and various stuff and videos and things I've done over the years about the Romanov family there.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger. Feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I just want to thank Helen Rappaport and encourage all of our listeners to go to helenrappaport.com and find her entire body of work, as well as links to interviews that she has done on the Romanov family. It's absolutely fascinating. So with us today, we have producer Amanda.
Hello, Rebecca.
And fact checker Chris.
Hello, Rebecca. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Chris.
So what did you guys think about what Helen had to say?
Well, Helen was great, first of all.
Yeah.
That was really informative. She clearly knows a lot about it, the subject. And what I was drawn to, how was they painted over the windows. Could you imagine somebody painting over the windows? Like, you can't see anything if there's paint on the windows.
That's very true, Chris.
That's very true. Yeah, I mean, honestly, making that connection to how people are, you know, practicing self-quarantining now, and how the Romanovs must have just been going out of their minds with just a small garden to walk around, like that. It's just interesting how many of these tragedies somehow tie into what the world is experiencing right now.
Absolutely. Lockdown.
They were so extremely bored that they turned to chores. They turned to doing chores.
I know.
Their own chores, which they've never, ever, ever done. They're like, you know what? Let's do those.
I will wash my underwear.
I will wash my underwear.
Ooh, I haven't quite gotten there yet. I'm still like, there's piles of laundry I have not done yet. I think I need to be a little bit more bored.
Quarantine, yeah.
I mean, and what, you know, she really placed blame on Lenin. Which is, ended up giving Lenin the big slap and sending Nicholas II to jail. She really made me rethink my thoughts on Nicholas II. Perhaps we were too hard on him.
I agree, because I think we got kind of wrapped up in the ineptitude of Nicholas II and forgot. You know, we kind of lost how gruesome these, you know, executions were, and how in some ways unnecessary. I mean, you understand the government has been overthrown and they're going to execute the former czar. But how Helen was explaining that it was incomprehensible to Nicholas that they would kill his family, it made me think how unnecessary that really was and how cruel. And it made me think maybe we did get it wrong.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we sort of focused on sort of the 30,000 foot view, right? Or whatever. Like, we were taking a really...
Right, how did it get to that?
Big old scope view. But maybe, like the actual killing of the Romanovs, you know, I mean, maybe we should have been more narrow in our search about, in our sort of discussion of that.
I think what Amanda's saying, you know, the word unnecessary, it kind of sums up what my feelings about that, and then changes my perspective on who's to blame, really.
Right.
Because, yes, Nicholas was to blame for all of his errors, but what we're discussing is the execution of an entire family, and really, was that necessary? I know that what they thought it was necessary, because if they weren't all killed, then there would still be a lineage, and they wanted to do away with the monarchy. But it's not humane, and it's not necessary.
Right. I mean, geez, it's tough. It's like, was Nicholas more to blame for not ushering in sort of a more gradual sort of change in government and society? He oversaw like a massive change in the country. Could he have done that better? And maybe that's not the question we should really be asking here. While that might be true, does he deserve to go to jail for the murder of his family? I maybe not. Maybe we jumped the gun a little bit there.
Also, the way that they carried it through was so sneaky and devious, especially because they weren't open about it. You know, they buried them in unmarked graves right off the side of the road, right, in like a forested area, and they weren't upfront about them killing all the children, right? Like, it's not right. It's not like this was a legal execution. It was done, you know, really in... I mean, God, it was just like so gruesome.
It was gruesome. It was sloppy, and they clearly knew that they were doing something wrong, because they didn't tell the Russian people what they had done. And for many, many years, it wasn't until 91, I believe, that the first grave was found. So, you know, when you hide, right? What are you hiding? What do you have to hide? If you're hiding, it's like you've got chocolate on your hands, right?
Mm.
Go on.
You stuck your hands into the chocolate chip cookie jar.
Okay.
And when mom comes in and says, who ate all the cookies in the cookie jar, and your hands are hidden behind your back, well, who's guilty? Am I right?
Right.
Lenin has chocolate all over his hands.
All over his face. I mean, he is covered in chocolate.
Okay. By the way, we might have slapped some of that chocolate off his face, but do we remember what happened to him after we slapped him? Did anybody get eyes on him? Because maybe we should do a quick manhunt and pull him in and do a switch with him and Nicholas.
I think so. I think, look, and tell me what you guys think. I think we should swap. I think that Lenin actually deserves to go to jail. And I think Nicholas, you know, he was handed a terrible responsibility that he definitely didn't want. And at that point, the family had pretty much soiled, you know, their monarchy or their reputation, things weren't going well for the family as a whole. So he inherited kind of like the broken down car, old, you know, the old Camry that the windows don't go down and you have to call AAA to, you know, jump the battery for you every day.
Mm-hmm.
So while he could have done a better job for the sake of his family, I don't think he ever saw... I don't think he ever thought that someone could be so cruel, and that someone was Lenin.
I agree. I'm down to change the verdict.
Wow. Is this a first for us? We've changed one of the verdicts.
We've definitely gotten it wrong.
A half a dozen times.
I'll tell you, these quote-unquote experts really make a pretty convincing case when they start to talk about the real facts of these stories, don't they, guys?
That's why we bring them in.
Yeah, we bring him in after the fact because we like to know how wrong we are.
Well, we have our own criteria and we're not backing down from that. It still works.
You know,
who's going to break the news to Kate Casey?
Yeah.
Oh, she's going to be upset.
Should we tell her?
No.
We'll have a separate. No, we won't tell her. We won't tell her. But yeah, you know, history, it's a learning process. Am I right? We're constantly learning more and more and more. And so our opinions might change.
Well, maybe we should put a little asterisk on this episode and we'll just say we're going to switch the verdict as long as we'll shoot an email to Kate, make sure she's okay with it. And then if she gives
us a
thumbs
up. She's not going to be okay with it.
Or no.
No, absolutely not. Sorry, this stays between the original three.
Okay. All right.
Sorry, Kate. But also, thank you so much for... I mean, she was an incredible guest, very well informed. So, okay, it's settled. Nicholas II, you're getting the big slap. Lenin, you're going to the alarmist jail. It kind of does feel nice to put Lenin in the alarmist jail. It's like, finally, he wasn't a great guy. Let's face it.
That's only good news.
Yeah. I mean, baby steps. We still haven't gotten Hitler somehow, but...
We got to be careful, though, because he could lead an uprising. He led an uprising once. He could do it again in the jail. So we've got to maybe add some extra security in there. I don't know, do what, but...
Yeah, but we're going to paint over the window in his jail cell.
Oh, good idea.
Good call. That's a really good call.
Now, I also want to mention that our friends over at the Web Crawlers podcast, they have done a whole episode on Rasputin, which is a must listen. So if you want to further your knowledge of the Romanovs in that period of history, go on over to Web Crawlers and find their Rasputin episode because it's really good.
Well, another day where we save the day. We save the world.
We save the day.
That's right.
I feel good. I hope you guys feel good.
I feel great.
I hope everyone has a really great day. And I hope everyone goes on to Apple Podcasts and rates, reviews, subscribes, and leaves us a nice little five-star message. Amanda?
We've gotten some really good reviews after we put that call out to try to get our star rating up. And we're still at only 4 out of 5 stars. But you want me to read one or two? Because people have been stepping up. So
yeah, let's read one.
Here's one from Imagine Non-Tech. Imagine Non-Tech. Wonderful show, 5 stars. Comedy meets history in this great show that tries to figure out who is to blame for historical tragedies. The shows could run for a long time as there are a multitude of tragedies out there to find blame on. Mm. So thank you. And then here's one from Sage Pass. 5 stars. Just started listening, but I'm definitely going to binge this. Now, I just want to say we've probably gotten about, I don't know, 5 reviews since we put the call out on last week's Aftermath. And I got to say the numbers just aren't adding up because we get thousands and thousands and thousands of people listening. And we have still probably only about 850 reviews. So if you're one of those people who are enjoying the podcast and haven't quite got yourself to rate and review, now is the time to pick up your phone and please rate and review. Because we are really enjoying making this podcast, but we cannot continue unless more people start to listen, which is why we need you to rate and review so people can find the podcast. So that's my little threat. Hope it didn't come across too aggressive.
Well, it looks like some people like in Great Britain and in Australia and Canada have been reviewing as well. I just saw one from the UK from Great Britain that said that it's like hanging out with your friends. And she also gave us a 5-star review. Her name is Veronica. And she said that she likes all of the episodes, especially the Home Alone episode. And she tends to agree with the verdicts, or at least I understand why the panel made their decision. So we'll see what she thinks about the Romanovs, if we got it right or so. But yeah, she ran in from London. So I don't know where these reviews are going, but let's keep it up.
Yeah. So some of them, the podcast app that I look at is Apple Podcasts in the US. So those are the ones I'm seeing. But yes, it's true that some of our international listeners are reviewing on their international platforms. So we can also take a look at those. So that's true.
Oh, that's good. So keep it up, guys. And don't forget to call us, right? Amanda, what is our hotline number?
Our hotline number, let me find that for you. Please leave us voicemails and emails if you're too shy for a voicemail. You can also send a voice memo. But our number is 844-370-8643. And all of our Instagram handles and our email are in the show notes.
Well, thank you so much for listening, and tune in next week. We'll be talking about the disappearance of Amelia Earhart.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.